The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
And we've got a general election looming, all but confirmed, for November 29th. And one thing is certain, that over the next few weeks, you're going to be inundated with waves of information washing over you. And no small amount of it could probably be classed as misinformation. So, how do you deal with all of this? Stephen O'Leary is the founder at Olitico. He is with me, as is Dr. David Robert Grimes, a scientist and author of The Irrational Ape. You're both very welcome, gentlemen. And I might start with you, David. How would you describe, at the moment, the current misinformation landscape?
I think we have to distinguish between misinformation and disinformation.
Okay.
Misinformation is the accidental propagation of false claims. That's very common. Everyone does it by accident occasionally. Disinformation is usually what we're more concerned about in elections. That tends to be when you are deliberately putting out falsehoods with the intention of damaging someone else. In previous Irish elections, it always happened to some degree, but social media has made it so much worse. Topics like immigration, which are things that get people very emotive and kind of shut down their critical faculties, they are often what people use to get a wedge in with very extreme viewpoints. So we're going to see a lot of that, I feel, in the forthcoming election.
And how prevalent is disinformation in this country in terms of the kind of the political narrative compared to other jurisdictions?
We don't currently have very good metrics on this, despite the fact that we all know disinformation is a huge problem and it's very prevalent online. There's different ideas about how we should analyse that and how much affects people. For example, some estimates say that a lot of people are touched by it in some ways. Other ones say it's a much smaller proportion. But the fact is, if you go on to X now or onto Instagram and look up things about elections, you will find high invective content, stuff that is obviously false, but designed to inflame. The number one predictor of whether we share content online is whether it makes us outraged, angry, or disgusted. And people that make disinformation are fully aware of that when they construct it.
And Stephen, the disinformation that does exist and has existed within campaigns and in campaigning in this country, I mean, the source of it, is it the same source that we've seen in other kind of jurisdictions? Kind of, I guess, famously, kind of Russian bots in the 2016 US elections, is what people maybe think of.
So the sources of misinformation, it's very hard to pin down exactly the sources of disinformation. They're coming in kind of many forms and guises and from a lot of different places. What tends to be central to them is, like it's already been commented on, the idea of trying to elicit a really strong emotional response. That's kind of what's central to a huge amount of this content.
You know, in trying to determine the source, I mean, that beyond the kind of the technological routes, you could kind of go down the kind of the classic kind of Key Bono kind of route, you know, in terms of who benefits. And that leads you to kind of the foreign actors, maybe in the context of a US election. And look, that there's maybe a value in kind of, you know, upsetting the apple cart in any kind of stable European democracy. But I mean, you'd wager it's probably more internal. Is it kind of purposeful disinformation in this country? Is just, you know, somebody kind of get leverage over somebody else?
Think about anyone who's got a vested interest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good place to start. Who's got an interest in the outcome of the election?
It's not new either, though, is it? Like, as in the means of which we're doing it are new, but kind of...
There's also the other factor related to that is sometimes it doesn't necessarily matter where it came from. It's what consequences it had. For example, we know a lot of anti-immigrant disinformation is being circulated from originally Russian sources to inflame native racists that already exist. The people setting fire to refugee centres and asylum seeker centres are Irish. They're not Russian agents. They may have been inflamed by this stuff, but they already had that capacity to do this damage already. So again, it's more about foreign actors maybe manipulating people, but that had to exist somewhere here already for it to ever be manipulated.
So, I mean, do we get too fixated then on things like the source of it and the message, and we should be kind of more kind of the fault lies not in the stars but in ourselves type thing?
Well, look, I mean, I'm obviously biased on this, where I will say that if we taught people the basics of critical thinking and information hygiene, we wouldn't have to have these conversations every election cycle, because we'd be very good at differentiating stuff that is obviously nonsense online. But there's a difference for people who are affected by misinformation and disinformation, who inadvertently stumble upon it, and those who would use it to prop up a narrative they already want to exist. So again, working at the motivations of people in both you know, propagating this stuff, which we talk about a lot from the sources, but also in why people choose to amplify different things. And that's sometimes reflective of their own political position. And that can tell you a lot about people as well. We now have become curators of our own media. So people cherry pick the sources they want to listen to, and they cherry pick the narratives that they want to propagate to give them a fig leaf of validation for what they do. I think Stephen knows better about that than me.
Well, the cherry picking piece is interesting because it does suggest that there's an element of choice here, but we do know too that the algorithms play a massive role. So it is one thing to go out and seek misinformation or disinformation. But in reality, if you start to consume it, the algorithms want to feed you content that you will consume, content that will keep you on the platform. So again, they have a vested interest in continuing to serve you this content. That's where things can become, I suppose, a bit of a slippery slope, because it doesn't take a lot. You consume two or three of these pieces of content, and very quickly the social network realizes, okay, this is the type of content that gets this user to stop, to pause, to watch, to consume advertising. And ultimately, that's what the networks want to do. So it's another important factor here is the role the networks have in, I suppose, kind of keeping an eye on this and also having facilities in place to report it and to correct it if possible.
David, I mean, to kind of come to a theme that you're familiar with, and if people are being bombarded with all of this through the algorithm, I mean, their reaction, as perverse as it might seem to us who haven't been bombarded with that information, misinformation, disinformation, whatever you call it, that their reaction is probably rational on some level. Is it, you know, in the sense that, like, this is, they've been surrounded kind of with their was it Aristotle, the prisoners in the cave? They're looking at the shadows on the wall and they think this is the world.
I think it was Plato, but Plato. Don't hold me to that one. No, you absolutely have a very valid point, right? And when I talk about susceptibility to disinformation, I always talk, it's on a spectrum, right? There are people who are incredibly affected by it and people for whom they can brush it off much easier. And there's also, I make a difference between people who are victims of misinformation, and I look at a lot of health disinformation, so people who fall victims of stuff and harm themselves, versus people who enjoy propagating this for a variety of psychological and ideological reasons. So there is a whole spectrum of this. But ultimately, we're talking, when it comes to elections, about everyone having a vote, and therefore democracy pivots on the idea that we're all informed voters making rational choices. The problem that it is, if we can be perverted away from that and made into polarized, you know, binarized creatures, we no longer have political plurality that is representative of the average population. Now, I am speaking well out of my wheelhouse here. I'm looking at Stephen here. He'll know a lot more about this than me. But that would be my concern.
Okay. Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, the one, I suppose, kind of maybe shining light here is that we do have really good fact-checking systems in place. And there are some publishers in Ireland who do a really good job in this place, The Journal being probably a real standout organisation. And their fact-checking series work really hard, particularly when it comes to elections, to find and correct this mis- and disinformation that exists. So I think, you know, the point has already been made, but I think it's a really important one. It's about education. And critically, it's about educating the next level of voters, because there is an argument that if you've got a vote already, well, you've probably been exposed to an awful lot of this information and how much education is open to you. But, you know, take that 13 to 17 year old cohort, right, who are going to, in the next set of elections, have a vote. It's critical that in our schools and our education systems, we put proper curriculum in place that actually teaches students at that age how to understand the media, how to critically think, and how to recognize mis- and disinformation and become more informed.
Absolutely. I mean, and that is the real thing here. We're already infected. There's a thing called cognitive immunity, where in theory we can vaccinate people to at least identify the hallmarks of mis- disinformation and its evil cousin malinformation. Let's not get into that now. But these are things that we don't currently have the literacy for. Digital natives, which are the younger generations brought up with social media, aren't naturally any more immune to it than we are. This requires training. This is not something that's going to correct itself. This requires us to actually grasp the nettle and go, right, we need to realize this is a problem and we need to teach the next generation not to have it. So we're kind of doomed. But the younger generation, if we take corrective action now, this might be something we don't have to have a conversation about every 4 to 5 years.
Might there not be a technological solution?
Well, the Poynter Institute have announced today that they've launched a new program with YouTube where they're taking a really proactive step in funding this kind of a technological solution, in putting, I suppose, supports in place, particularly for educators, to target that critical 13 to 17 year old cohort and try to increase the levels of media literacy. And critically, that questioning, that ability that when you see a story or you're served a piece of content that looks like it might be truthful, that you know how to go and actually find out for yourself whether or not it is truthful or whether it is that mis or disinformation.
Yeah. But not to kind of absolutely kind of sound like I'm playing the part of the kind of the information gatekeeper in the traditional media, but is there not a value in society that people, the masses, don't question every piece of information that they're presented with?
Absolutely. And look, there's...
No, for it to function, we need people to kind of just swallow some
stuff. In defense of traditional media, one thing traditional media does have is it does have some standards of conduct. There is some recourse if someone publishes... If we went on air and said something defamatory about someone or something wrong, we'd have to issue a corrective or there would be legal obligations. At the moment, and Stephen's alluded to this, and I come back to it, social media companies don't have your best interest at heart. They are like cigarette vendors. The more they can get you to smoke, or in this version, consume their ads, the more they can keep you on. We already know that content that inflames people keeps you engaged longer. In the 2020 elections in the US, Facebook's own internal research showed that they could quell a lot of its disinformation. They didn't want to because it kept the most engaged customers engaged. Mm. So we will look one day look back at social media companies the way we look at gambling companies, cigarette companies and fossil fuel companies.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to, you know, Smartless, the podcast with the Will Arnett and Jason Bateman, all that crowd. They had Sacha Baron Cohen on, and he said, you're taking the words out of his mouth. He literally said that. He goes, we're going to look back and we're just going to be gobsmacked that we all amongst ourselves talked about how to kind of solve the problem of kind of the lion that was just standing there beside the campsite, and none of us addressed the actual lion, you know? So listen, maybe he was on to something. Stephen, before I let you go, how much of a factor will this play in a looming general election? You know what I mean? As in, or no, let me ask a better way. For people who are listening to this and they're already infected, as David says, but they want to equip themselves maybe with some skills to trying to discern fact from fantasy or fiction over the next 5 or 6 weeks, what's the advice?
Well, it's down to trusted sources. You know, like there's enough of them. And there's a short list, right? So traditional media organizations who've got digital footprints. So you don't have to listen to the radio or watch TV, but if you're consuming content on TikTok, consume it from trusted news sources, trusted journalists, politicians, political parties. There's a range of bodies that you can point to who should and will uphold a level of information that goes beyond other organizations. Seek them out and you should find the truth.
All right. Well, listen, lads, thanks many for coming in. Stephen O'Leary, founder of Alitico, Dr. David Robert Grien, scientist and author of The Irrational Ape.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.